You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lisa Corinne Davis. She's talking to me from Brooklyn. Lisa, thanks so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Lisa, let's talk about your work. What are you working on right now in your studio?
Well, there's not a lot going on in my studio. It's a little empty right now, but I had a very busy fall with a show at Zola Lieberman in Chicago and Koenig Clinton Gallery in Bushwick, New York, Esra Masri Gallery in Albany, and Gallery Cree in Hudson, and a show that's up right now, a drawing show at Real Estate Fine Art in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. So there's a lot out, and I'm starting to make some new paintings. Actually, I'm making the new paintings from old paintings. They're old paintings that weren't so successful that I've sanded down and left a kind of residue before building them back up. And something I've done before and something I like in creating a kind of embedded surface where the playing of the canvas isn't really readable to the viewer because things exist seemingly further behind or in the distance or in the fabric of the canvas.
That's interesting. So let's talk about that a little bit, and maybe we should also go through one of the shows that you just had. But you're saying you have older canvases that weren't successful that you kind of sanded down, and so there's a kind of ghost of an image on there that then you work on top of?
Yeah, correct. I mean, my work is about a kind of dislocation, not letting anyone really place themselves in the space of the canvas. So space is disorienting, scale is disorienting, what one might read, they're abstract hanging, so what one might read into suggestions of things is open and malleable. And part of what's interested me is how to almost get everything to not even firmly exist on that plane, to keep everything as unstable as possible. And so I found that removing or partly removing old paintings and leaving that residue that's covered with a kind of glaze helps to destabilize that plane in a way that, supports my overall agenda in the painting.
So, I mean, you're talking about, of course, formal aspects of it, which I'm asking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also other layers, right?
Correct.
There's layers of social or other cultural issues. You're a woman of color. Are those being woven into the work as well? And if so, how?
For sure. I'm a African American woman of very light skin. I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish neighborhood. I went to a Quaker private school. I married a Canadian. I think that one's history is not so stable. And so identity to me has always been a faulty security because naming someone by a race and then going with a list of assumptions about that person's background is a slippery slope. So yes, I'm interested in contingency and that someone coming to the abstract hangs that I'm making is almost bringing with them their own ways of reading codes or their own sense of location and place. And that is going to mingle with what I suggest, and they'll take away those things they came with maybe a question of, well, why am I assuming these things, or are they secure? Are they things I can rely on?
So let's talk about that a little more, because that's a little abstract. Right? People are, as you're saying, bringing their own, perspectives to it, and yet you're also providing them with a certain amount of content. And it's, I don't know if this comparison is fair, but I think of Ellen Gallagher's work and how there's a kind of, she's biracial, right? And there's interviewed her quite a while ago, and there's other issues happening there, but she has her own little iconography happening in there that you could kind of bypass and not look at, but if you look closer, you would have reactions to it or interpretations of it that of course might be different than what she's intending, but it kind of gives you, in that way, maybe a more literal window into her experience as a biracial woman growing up in America. And so it's kind of almost teaching about some of the things that she's dealing with, but you could also just as easily almost avoid all those issues and look at her work as practically decorative, like Agnes Martin or something. How do you feel your work kind of engages the viewer or not in terms of these issues? I mean, I know you kind of just explained that to me, but I'm wondering, is there also specific content that you want them to react to or understand?
Yeah, I definitely want, I guess I came out of the 80s and the early 90s where, politics and art became, for me, strident and didactic. And I've never felt personally secure with identifying specifically with any culture thoroughly, as in that kind of clear way, and so yes, I mean, I think the work can be interpreted on a very political front about issues of identity and how important it is to hold on to certain things and what you can shed. But yes, I think you could see them on as patterns, as decorations, as mapping systems, all sorts of things. And those, again, are what one needs to connect to something. I mean, when I think of a personal story, I remember knowing someone once who was who was Dominican, and she was going to make a meal for my children. And I said, she said, what would you like me to make? I said, make something Dominican. And I came home, and what she had made was a tuna noodle casserole, which I thought was, quintessentially American, not Dominican. So when we spoke about it, she said, well, I grew up in the Bronx, and this is what my mother made. So my need to classify and identify a specific type of food to her culture was my need, and false. Because the culture that she firmly identified with, but also was intermingled with growing up in the Bronx, brought in a different type of cuisine. And so that kind of fluidness with the work is important for me, that you can start with an assumption and think, well, what about this? And why wouldn't I go to that place and thinking about things? I mean, people immediately with the work want to identify things. That's this, I'm here, oh, I'm flying over a landscape, that's a kind of weird organism, that's a cartoon character. But I just hope that when they continue to look at the work, different things will start to add up and they will come to a different narrative in the work. So I kind of want it all, I think, I hate to say.
And so let's talk a little bit about one of the shows that you recently had. I don't know if there's one that in particular from last fall. It sounded like you were enormously busy. Is there a particular show that you should discuss a bit?
I thought it was interesting that Maggie Clinton of Kone Clinton curated this show called Lack of Location is My Location. And it was a bunch of artists, mostly non-painters, who she put into that exhibition. And again, it was dealing with similar issues, is that we all want to locate, we all want to be located, but sometimes it's not a fixed place. So I was really happy to be included in that show.
And was there a discussion of your work? Like, you know, I hear different things from people in, you know, Europe and other places. One woman I talked to said as a painter, there was a great discussion about her work in Berlin, but not at all in London, and you know, a bit more in New York. Were there discussions about your work or feedback from some of the shows that you had last fall that's worth discussing?
I mean, I'm actually very pleased that with all of the shows, and even going up to Albany and talking to students at, you know, the gallery there, which is part of the College of St. Rose, you know, young non-art majors, I feel that people really understand the work, and I'm very pleased that somehow it translates in a way that I feel satisfactory with. So I'd say all of them have given me that kind of positive feedback. So I'm thrilled with that.
And in terms of dialogue from museum, I mean, gallery goers or collectors, is there conversations there that interest you or surprise you in some of those shows?
No, I mean, the only surprise is that I'm amazed of not only how much people understand things, but the depth of how they understand it. So, for example, you know, someone gave me a reading from by a man by the name of Mark Taylor called The Moment of Complexity. And the chapter in his book is called From Grid to Network. And this is, you know, dealing with not just, I mean, I use the grid in my work as a sense of trying to create some firm order. But I also deal with issues of, like, that falling apart to different types of networks. And so I was interested that someone was able to find this essay for me that talks about, you know, collapsing walls and does it through molecules to architecture, to work, to, you know, to Kant, to, I want the work to feed out into all notions of contemporary culture and life, and I think that's the thing that I find that the people I'm talking to are bringing back issues of this kind of complexity, the chaos to trying to assess some kind of order. So the kinds of feedback I'm getting are information that I don't already have, and that's terrific for me.
That is terrific. And let's go back a little bit to perhaps when you were first getting shows. It's nice that we're talking, you know, today on this day that's celebrating women and also there's, you know, you know, notoriously in the art world, it's been difficult for women, especially women of color, women that aren't white, you know, and even for those women, you know, it's easier for men. So when you were first starting out or getting your first shows, how did that happen? Did you find that particularly difficult, and what made that happen?
Still do. Well, I was very lucky to be exhibited by June Kelly Gallery. June Kelly has flipped the ratio. So she shows the majority of her artists are African Americans and the minority are white or other. So June was the first person to represent me in New York, and that was very meaningful. I mean, at the same time, I'm not sure if you know that, shortly after that, I had a show in Charlottesville, Virginia, and met Robert Reed from Yale. And Robert really liked my work and invited me to come up and teach that summer at Yale, which was a stressful but wonderful experience. And then I eventually became a professor there, from 1997 to 2002, and then a critic slightly past that, just 2004. So I think, you know, watching someone like Robert Reed, who, not a woman, but navigated as an African American for teaching at Yale for 50 years, he recently passed away, and along with someone like June Kelly, who was a force to try to correct the barometer on the exhibition of African American women, I feel like those two forces really have helped me or supported me quite a bit at the very beginning.
And that's so important, I guess, the people around you that are supporting you. It sounds like you kind of effortlessly went into those networks, although I imagine it wasn't that easy. June Kelly, of course, is a wonderful gallery, and finding her and working with her, she really seems to support her artists so much. But did nonprofits also play a role in supporting you as well, or was it primarily June at the beginning?
Oh, no, I think not-for-profits are extremely important, and I tell my students that. So art in general, before I was represented by June, art in general gave me my first show, Holly Block, who then became the director of the Bronx Museum after art in general, who also recently passed away, gave me my first show in New York. And so I think places like that provide an open dialogue that has little to do with business. And so I was able to work with Holly. I was on her board for a while. And I think that's a very important support for me also.
Yeah, that's important. And it's interesting that, you're saying, you mentioned that also to your students, the importance of nonprofits in terms of building community for artists or having shows or in general support. How do you talk about the importance of nonprofits?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've gone beyond the nonprofit. And I'll speak about that in a second, but I think that there's nothing without the community. I mean, nothing happens without other artists, frankly, having your back. And I think it's important to remember that. And also, I think we're all thinkers, and we need to have a place to not only make, but discuss what we make in a trusting atmosphere. I think my students now, and I'm at Hunter College now, they have created I don't know what to call them, collaborative galleries where bunches of them get together and create a space, and then maybe one or two of them use that space in the back for their studios, and they rotate curating a show every month. So everyone in the collaborative gets a chance to create a show, and often those shows are people they know, people they've seen, people they went to school with. My studio is in Bushwick, in a building that is full of these galleries, and I think it's a way to keep the commercial aspect of it out and create their work while curating and thinking about ideas that are floating around among communities of artists. So these seem to be extremely important support systems for people coming out of graduate school now.
Absolutely. And to talk a little bit about graduate school and Hunter College, you know, you've been teaching for a while and seeing a lot of students and moving out into the world. You know, we're in such a time of kind of change and tumult, or that's how it seems, you know, with this new administration and all that's happened last year and this year. Do you see that affecting students and how they're moving out into the world with their art?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are much less interested in the commercial world. They really have, after the election last year, came together like in ways I'd never seen before, and the idea of their community is very strong. I mean, when I first started teaching, I'd say it was more about competition, who's on top, who's going to go where, who's going to be written about by whom. Now it's a group think, a group hug situation. And the atmosphere has really changed. The way they talk about each other, the way they talk to each other in a crit. It's a world of we need to take care of each other rather than we need to step on top of each other. So I think things have really changed in that way because of the climate of the world right now.
Well, that's exciting to hear. You know, I mean, how you know, it seems almost like a 60s environment, although it's not, and maybe that's an unfair comparison, but because we're in such a different world now. But that's a wonderfully exciting and optimistic view of the future of the art world and of artists entering the art world, it sounds like, because there's been so much kind of, you know, pushback about all the commercial pressures that artists are under, especially graduating from schools like Yale,
sure,
wanting to make it and make all this money. But you're saying that in part because of all the political events that have happened in the last year or so, there's a little more of, what did you say, a group hug, which is really warming to hear about. And that turns into collaboratives? Is that kind of what you're saying, that's part of that gesture or that movement, is this kind of coming together of artists?
I think it's interesting that you bring up the 60s. On some level it is like that, but I think it's been pushed a little further because of technology and the internet. There's almost a sense of a more of a romantic, I didn't really experience the 60s, but I think there was a little cynicism mixed into that about the world and about adults and about people in power. I think this, I don't see these grad students as cynical. I see them as hopeful and almost overly romantic. And so it's interesting for me to watch, and it's wonderful to be around.
And to come back to your work, so you're working on new work now, and you've had so many shows in this past year, and I imagine we'll continue to have shows. And you also said, and I feel it's important to address some of these things, especially since it's this day of celebrating women. You say, of course, it's still a struggle for you, being a woman, being an artist, and also a color. How is that impacting your work now, or is it still a struggle, and still there's hurdles to get over there?
Well, I think I have the trifecta of hurdles. African-American, woman, and of a certain age. And so I think those three things are difficult. All you have to do is look at any blue chip gallery, any New York Times on a Friday. It's still heavily tilted to male artists, so that's still an issue. And it's, for me, it's shocking in all the ways the world has gotten better. In many ways, the art world stays really caught up in a time gone by. I mean, for people who are progressive, you know, in the arts, I'm shocked with the inequality still. I'm shocked with the separation of black and white, pretty much still. I mean, I can go to a art party or a lecture, and it's on one end of things, and it can be all white, and I can go to another one, and it can be all black or mostly black. So there's not a lot of fluidness between the two camps, I think, in the art world. And it's still, you know, I think they're a little better on the age front. You know, I'm I think that people have gotten a little more interested in artists that have, and women artists who are older. And I hope that continues. I'm going to be in a really wonderful show in October at the New York Studio School. It's all women, and those of us who are older get to pick a younger woman. And I'm happy to be included in that with people like Dorothea Rockburn and Louise Fishman and Susan Sacon. I mean, these are all heroes of mine. And so that's an exciting. So I think there is a little more interest in looking at that population. But it's, you know, all three are pretty hard.
Well, that is an exciting show coming up, and yeah, there's so much, you know, when you talk about all the separation with just audiences, yeah, that seems to be consistently the case in the art world, even between, you know, certain mediums. You know, I was talking to an artist who was a painter, and then she also did some performance, and she said, you know, the people that come to my performances are not the people that come to see the paintings. They're like often different crowds, that there's all this segmenting of the art world based on all kinds of things, which, yeah, it seems so antithetical to what you'd think would be encouraged, but it's still there and not really even talked about that much either. We don't hear much about
it's
that.
Not talked about. Yeah, exactly.
And before we go, is there, before I ask you the last question, is there something you want to say about upcoming shows or something that, that you want to add before I ask you one more question?
Yeah, I mean, there's two more shows coming up besides that New York Studio School show in October. Opening in April, the McDowell Colony, which I've been a part of, is having a show called McDowell Now with three or four contemporary painters who were at McDowell within the last year. And that'll be a curator gallery. And then back to Robert Reed, Fred Giampietro Gallery in New Haven is doing a show of his work next month, and I feel very fortunate to be in the satellite room from his show, showing at the same time. And then there will be a panel discussion about Robert's work on May 19th. It feels good to be connected with him there.
Well, there'll be links to all those shows as if I can within the interview, so people can learn more about those as well as your work. And the last question I wanted to ask is the question I ask everybody: what are you reading at the moment, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, no, it's kind of a great question. Another thing I'm involved in is at Eric Firestone Gallery in New York. They just opened a show by a man by the name of Joe Overstreet, a much older African-American abstract artist. Joe and his wife, Corrine, started a gallery on the Lower East Side, like, you know, when no one went there. And actually back to places where I originally showed, this was one of them. It's called Kankelaba House. And they have operated that space for a long, long time. So along with the show at Eric Firestone, there will be a panel discussion and about his work. And so I guess because of that, I'm reading two books right now, both by the art historian Darby English. One's called How to See a Work of Art in Total Darkness, and the other one is 1971, A Year in the Life of Color. Both the 1971 dealing with African-American abstract painting of that time, and How to See a Work of Total Darkness is a book dealing with various African-American artists. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Both those books sound fascinating. Lisa, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.